trained as a music teacher. My brothers and I cut our teeth very early on the 1940s and 50s musicals. They had to be big and loud, lots of tap dancing, lots of singing, always happy ending. Always had to watch the musicals with the happy endings. And one of our favorites was Singing in the Rain. And my favorite years, we grew up with Gene Kelly and Frank Sinatra and Fred Astaire, Vera Ellen, and Miller, Jules Munson, all of the great musicals. But Singing in the Rain is very special, and it's a favorite of a lot of people, even if they've never really gotten into musicals. The Singing in the Rain, literally, the tap dancing, some of the best tap dancing they believe has ever been captured on film is captured in that. Especially the dance with Gene Kelly and Donald O'Connor. There are three of them that were the main leads in that musical: Gene Kelly, Donald O'Connor, and Debbie Reynolds. So my mom, this was in the 80s, and my mom heard that Debbie Reynolds and Donald O'Connor were doing a stage show. They were going across the country, singing and dancing, telling stories from their time in Hollywood. And so we went to the show, my mom got tickets and went to Pittsburgh, and we were all excited to go to Pittsburgh to see a show. And it was a really awesome show. And one of the things I remembered from it was they both were talking about how the kids of today, which was my brothers and I, none of us knew who they were anymore. You know, they were no longer kind of stars. And Debbie Reynolds, of course, said how she had her own career, and now in the 80s, she was now the mother of Carrie Fisher and Playboy in the 80s. Princess Leia. She was Princess Leia's mom, and that's how she was known. Instead of being Debbie Reynolds, the famous actress and singer, she was now Princess Leia's mom. And she was fine with that. You know, she was great with her daughter's success. But they talked about that. So we went to Arby's. I don't know why I remember that detail, but we went to Arby's after. And we sat in one of those windows, and you could see the city, and you could see what was happening on the streets. And we were enjoying watching people, and suddenly I saw Donald O'Connor walk past the window, and I freaked out. I was like, I turned into total stalker fangirl. Of course, they didn't talk about fangirls back then, but I was totally freaked out. I grabbed the fangirl, the playbill. My mother could only find a pencil quickly in her purse, so I grabbed the pencil, and I chased him down the street, went around the corner, and I came up behind him, and I said, you know, Mr. O'Connor, can I have your autograph, please? And he stopped and he turned and was so gracious, as those kind of show people are. They're so glad to meet their fans. And he asked my name, and I think I said that he saw, I don't know exactly what I said, but I was like totally like staring at him, you know, in a creepy fashion. And you know, he was like, what's your name? And I told him, and I said, you know how many times I watched Singing in the Rain? And he was, you know, thanking me, and he signed my playbill. And then I, you know, rushed back to my family and was so excited about, you know, having this autograph, which of course I went back to school and nobody cared about, because it wasn't like I met Michael Jackson. Nobody in school knew who Donald O'Connor was. But, so I got his autograph, and later I realized, I thought about how rude I was, because he was walking with a woman who was about his age, probably was his wife, but I didn't look at the woman at all. I didn't say hello, I didn't make eye contact. Like, I was so creepily focused on him and talking to him that she was completely invisible to me. And maybe you've had that moment, those kind of moments where you realize later that somebody was completely invisible to you. Somebody that you really, you know, should have noticed, or you suddenly notice and you haven't been noticing. But, you know, it's pretty common for us as people to see people, but also to not see people. And that's a pretty, you know, pretty common thing for us as people. And in this parable, as I said with the young people, this parable is really one of the lessons. There's many lessons in this parable, but one of the lessons is about seeing. It's about seeing one another. It's about truly seeing your neighbor. And I know that I've been on both sides of being seen and being invisible. And maybe you've been both. And there's times that we don't want to be seen. My brother Darren talks about how he doesn't like to have small talk, so he'll be in the store and see somebody and ducks behind the thing of clothing or whatever. I don't know if you've ever ducked. If you see me in the store and I see a duck, I'm coming after you. So, you warned. But, you know, there's times that we don't want to be seen. And there's times that we're very hurt because we haven't been seen. We feel like we haven't been appreciated, or somebody should have noticed us, or they forgot our name. And, you know, and so all of us have been on both sides of the coin. And, you know, there's a lot of reasons that we don't see each other, aren't there? some of us are just exhausted. We're lucky just to get through the day and remember our own family's names, much less anybody that we might see out, you know, out in the world. Some of us are just so busy that we just don't have the time that we typically would need to make to do some connecting. And I know also, you know, sometimes we just don't, I hate to say it callously, but we just don't have the space to care. We don't care, you know, about who we're bumping into because we just don't have the space for it. It just isn't a priority for us. And, you know, one of the things I try to do that I'm not always good at is I always try when I'm going through the checkout line at the grocery store or I'm going through the drive-thru, I try to make a point of making eye contact. Even if it's just to say thank you. And that they know that I'm thanking them. And eye contact is a big deal to me. There's tons and tons of studies out there about the importance of eye contact. And so I do try to do that, and some days I do that better than others, especially, you know, if we're in a hurry or whatever. But, you know, just to take literally 1 second to look someone in the eye and say thank you, what a difference that can make to someone to feel like they were seen, that they weren't just, you know, another piece of machinery in the system. And so I encourage you to think about, as we continue to talk this morning, to think about who crosses your path on a typical day. Just a normal day, not a day that's different than any other, just a typical day. How many people do you cross paths with? And I'm not talking about being in the store and somebody's 30 yards over there. Just people that you naturally might make eye contact with, either accidentally or on purpose. And you might say good morning, or, you know, have a nice day, or whatever. How many people do you cross paths with? It's probably more than you can even imagine when you think about how many people you might run into when you stop to get gas or in your workplace. And if you're up here at the college, students are like the rest of us, they're creatures of habit. So most likely, if you sat in one spot on the campus at the same time each day during a semester, you're probably going to say you see a lot of the same people, aren't you? Because they're on the way to class. They're on the way to their typical whatever they're doing next. And you probably would see some of the same faces over and over if you sat so long enough to take notice. And, you know, the parable is that it's an exaggerated imagery. And it's a parable that is in the form of an apocalypse. Now, we have ideas of what we think apocalypse are, right? Zombie apocalypse, apocalypse now. Sometimes it's the end of the world, the end of society as we know it. There's these elements of futurism that are sometimes part of apocalypse. And it's definitely an exaggerated form of literature. And what it is it's to serve as a wake-up call. An apocalyptic story is meant to pull back the curtain and reveal a lesson that you urgently need to learn now before it's too late. So this isn't meant to be that there actually was a Lazarus and a rich man, you know, literally, but this is a very common situation, which all parables are, of this rich man and this poor man at his gate. But what steps out of it being a kind of typical everyday story is it steps onto the other side of the afterlife. And it's a warning, it's a cautionary tale. It's meant to warn the wealthy of their interaction with their neighbor, with especially the poor, the marginalized, those who don't have a voice. And there's this mirroring of the chasm. And we've got this big chasm there where the rich man and the poor man can no longer cross that chasm. It's uncrossable. You can't cross this chasm. And yet in life, that chasm could have been crossed. That was a crossable bridge, that was a crossable barrier, and yet it wasn't. And so now we have this mirroring, this flipping of the chasm, where the one who is receiving blessing now is in torment, and the one in torment is now receiving blessing. And it's really meant to be a cautionary tale of who do we see, and what kind of chasms can we build with our wealth? You know, what has our wealth, what kind of a bubble has our wealth created for us that we no longer see the poor, the marginalized, those who don't have a voice of their own, and how we can actually vilify them, turn them into villains. That part, it doesn't happen in the story, but you can easily see how someone sitting at the gate, unable to work for whatever reason, whatever was going on with Lazarus and his illness, meant that he couldn't work, and all of the horrible things that would be said about him, and assumptions that might be made about him being a thief or whatever to survive. The truth of this story is Jesus wants us to remember that all of our lives are intertwined. All of our lives are interwoven with one another, whether we live in the same country or not. We are walking this earth right now in 2019, we are walking this earth with a certain population of people, and we are all intertwined. Now, our wealth can sometimes make us feel a little apart, a little safe, a little distant. We can lose sight of the truth of the reality of other people's lives out there. And Jesus doesn't want us to do that. He wants us to remember who our neighbors are, and that we have a responsibility as Christians, that He has called us to have a responsibility to love our neighbor. And that is every breathing, human being in the world today. And that is a big job, but He doesn't back down and make it any easier on us. We are to bridge those chasms when we get the opportunity in whatever ways that we can, and be a voice for another when we have a voice. The sin here isn't the wealth. Don't stop listening. Don't stop listening with that. The wealth is not the sin. The sin is the invisibility that it creates in relationship to the neighbor. That is the sin, that the rich man no longer saw Lazarus. And it's interesting because usually in stories, the one with the power gets the name, and yet in this story, the poor man is given the name of Lazarus, which isn't the same Lazarus that was raised from the dead, by the way. But the sin is not that he's wealthy, it's that the poor became invisible to him. And when we lose sight of the most vulnerable in our society, in our world, when we lose sight of their reality, then in truth, we lose sight of our own. Because we are all vulnerable. We are all one illness away from having to lean on the kindness of strangers and friends. We are just as vulnerable, and that wealth creates this false reality, this bubble. That says, if you just rely on me, if you just rely on the foundation of me as your caretaker, everything will be fine. And we know the reality of that isn't true. God is the foundation that we stand on. And if we lose sight of that voice of those that are most vulnerable, we lose our own vulnerability, and that's a very dangerous thing. And it puts us in a false reality. We were working with kids probably about 20 years ago. There was a little girl that we were talking about fresh water. And we know that fresh water around the world is becoming more and more of an issue for people that have no access. And us living in the Great Lakes region, I think personally it'll be a long time before we feel the effects of that. I may be wrong, but my biologist can set me straight later. But we live in a region where we have the largest fresh water, right, in the world, so we have this, and yet the water around the world is becoming more and more expensive and a commodity that people can't afford. And we, as Christians, of course, believe that there are certain basic human rights we all deserve, and clean water, I think we would agree, is one of those that everybody should have access to. And it shouldn't cost them, their house in order to provide clean water. And this little girl said, we were talking about how when we turn on a tap, what comes out? Clean water. And she said, well, my parents work really hard, so I deserve that clean water. Indicating that other people who don't have clean water don't deserve it because they aren't lazy. They aren't working hard enough. They don't work as hard as my mom and dad. And we had a really good conversation out of that, about our assumptions with our wealth, that we are entitled to something, when sometimes, at least in my life, it's strictly luck of earth. I'm standing up here today because of a whole lot of people ahead of me and behind me, and I've had a lot of safety nets. Some of you have not had as many safety nets in your life. You've had to make it on your own, and you have done that. I have not lived a life where I have not had somewhere to go. If everything crumbled in my life, I have places that are safety nets I can go. And there are millions of people in the world who don't have that. And as the church, we try to be a safety net for people. And one of those is with the water. So we got to talking about, the folks out there that work just as hard, who love their children just as much, but can't offer clean water to them. And it's not a right, it's not a privilege, I'm saying that backwards, but that we have these blessings, but in an instant they can be taken away. And so we need to recognize that as we are a safety net for others, that someday we may need a safety net for ourselves. And so Timothy gives us some directives for the rich. You might say, well, what can I do? I'm not going to write one check and empty my bank account tomorrow. What can I do to counterbalance the blessings that God's given me? Well, Paul tells you in Timothy, we are to set our hope on God, not on our wealth. We are to do good. Everybody here is capable of that, no matter your age, no matter your background. We are all capable of doing good. We are to be rich in good works. We are to be rich in good works, connecting with people and doing good. We are to be generous, not penny pinchers, but generous when God calls us to be. And we are to be ready to share. I love that. I love that highlighted in the scripture today. It says they are to do good, to be rich in good works, generous, and ready to share. You know, sometimes we make people prove it to us that they deserve it, right? Do they deserve me to help them? And if you're feeling called to give, I tell people this, it's not your responsibility for what they do with the goodness that you do. You are responsible for when you are called to respond. And sometimes you may be called to respond and sometimes you may not. I'm not saying that you're called to respond every single time a need comes into our world, but if there's a need we can answer and we are called and feeling that motion, then forget about being the qualifiers. Because you are giving, God will bless you with a giving, and that's as far as you need to take it if you're feeling called to respond to something. And then there's the why. Why do we do this? Why do we bother? Why don't we just live, the high life like the rich man did? One, Paul says, is so that we can have a future that's on a sure foundation. Again, when we live with that bubble of wealth that keeps us from understanding our own vulnerability even within it, then our foundation is not sure, it's shaky. The other thing that we receive by living this way is that we hold on to life that is real life. We don't lose track of our roots. We don't lose track of some of our ancestors who you are living the life that you're living because they took the risk to get on a boat with $5 in their pocket and they came to this nation and they took risks. And you're the benefactor of that. You're the benefactor of that. So we can't forget our roots. We can't forget our roots. If we forget our roots, then again, we lose sight of true reality. And so we have a sure foundation and we hold on to what is real about life. And that is relationships. Relationships, relationships. That's what it's about. So God does have a plan for your wealth. I'm not going to write out what that looks like. If you want me to, come let me know. And I would be happy to do that. But that's not my job. God has a plan for your wealth, though. And He doesn't love you more than the poor or the poor more than you. But He has blessed you to be a blessing. And in whatever form that is, whatever calling that is, in whatever resources you have, which aren't always financial, there's a lot of other resources we have to offer as well. But God has blessed you to be a blessing. If my mother taught my brothers and I one thing, my dad, it was that because we were given so much, there was a lot to be expected of what we gave back. Because of the family we came from, the resources, the intelligence, the love for Jesus, the family, the healthy family that we were a part of. I'm so grateful. I didn't live in a family in which I was harmed mentally, physically, and all of those things. All of that means that I have a lot to be grateful for, and I have and feel that I have a lot to offer the world in being a safety net for others who didn't have the safety nets that I did. And so this day, I encourage you this week, if you do nothing else, pay attention. Pay attention to the people crossing your path. That like I shared with the children, you may be the only smile they get all day. And maybe say a little prayer for them. You don't even need to know their name, right? Because the Holy Spirit knows them. So as you're watching and paying attention, think about the good works that you can do that don't even cost you a penny. And of course, the good works that sometimes do. So this day, I encourage you to pay attention. Amen.